This is Emily Thomas, and you are listening to the Mom Struggling Well podcast. Hey, ladies, welcome back. This is Mom Struggling Well podcast. It's your favorite podcast. It's the one you make sure that you listen to the minute it comes out. I know it, and I appreciate it. I appreciate you guys for doing that. This is episode 126. I'm talking to Kristen Hatton. She is a wife, a mom of three. She's a pastor's wife, actually. And she discovered, kind of unknowingly, that she really loves teenagers and is here to help us love teenagers as well. When her and her family moved to a new area, she started a Bible study with girls her daughter's age to help her daughter make friends. And just because she's a pastor's wife does not mean that she knows what she's doing in teaching or has this very special desire to teach young girls, but she did it and it ended up being a huge blessing. We talk about what that experience looked like. We talked about walking through the season when her daughter had developed an eating disorder and she hadn't noticed, and all that that would do to your mom brain. We're already always beating ourselves up about not doing enough, and then all of a sudden, it would just be really hard. Talks about that, how to have a friend during that time, how to be a friend during that time when you're a grown-up mom and you feel like a failure and you still need a friend because you're still a person. And what does that look like to protect your daughter and also get your basic friendship needs met? She talks to me about understanding teenagers, how to empathize with them when they're freaking out about things that don't seem to be a big deal, how to have conversations like about idolatry and things like that with your teens, what it looks like in her house with teens and technology, all that kind of stuff. I forgot to say earlier, this is Valentine's Day week, you guys. I cannot believe how romantic it is in my house. It's just overwhelming. There's chocolate-covered strawberries everywhere, like rose petals just everywhere. It's so nice. Just kidding. No, listen, Valentine's Day, I made this big mistake years ago, almost a decade ago now. I made a mistake, and I want young moms to just learn from this. I thought it would be fun a long time ago when I had only the one kid and no job. Thought it'd be a good idea to make a Valentine's Day scavenger hunt that ended with some gifts. I don't know why. I didn't have the end game in mind, ladies. That's why. Now my kids think that is just part of Valentine's Day. And 3 minutes after they open their Christmas presents, they're talking about their Valentine's Day presents. And that should not be a thing because it isn't a thing except at my house. So not only do I have to buy presents when I feel like I just bought presents for Christmas, I have to make a scavenger hunt, and that probably sounds fun to some of you. I do not think it feels that fun. And I try to get my husband to help, but he would just tell them, just get over it. There's no Valentine's Day this year. But then when they're hunting around the house for their clues and trying to work together, it ends up being really cute. So I don't know. I'm ambivalent about it. But because it's not really cute right now, I just don't want to do it. So I'm just telling you, be careful what you do because it seems like a fun idea the one time. Does it seem like a fun idea for two decades? Then think twice about it. Also, I'm looking for someone to make a Valentine's Day scavenger hunt. So if that's something you got in your back pocket, go ahead and email it to me. Thanks in advance. All right, let's go ahead and get started on my talk with Kristen Hatton. Hi, Kristen. How are you today?
Hi, I'm good. Thanks for having me on.
You are so welcome. So will you please introduce yourself? Tell us about your family.
Yeah, sure. So I am a mom of three teenagers. I have one in college, one in high school, and one in middle school. So definitely in the throes of life with teenagers. My husband is a pastor. We live in Edmond, Oklahoma, which is a suburb, more or less, of Oklahoma City. And I'm also an author and a speaker and blogger. I have two books out, written two teens, and that kind of came about through starting a Bible study with my daughter when she was in middle school. And I would have had no idea that I would have become an author, but I just saw this void in books for teenagers and just kind of got on this new track.
Isn't that funny how that happens?
Yeah.
God opens up. You never would have thought. Like for me, this podcast, what? Okay, so before kids, what was your background? Did you have a job in something?
I did. Yeah, actually, I did political fundraising.
Huh. So you're used to navigating tricky situations.
Yeah,
which yields
for
itself
sure.
good to teens.
Oh, gosh. I mean, yes, I've had senators and governors in my car and I've hit, you know, potholes and they've like bounced up in the back seat. Oh, yeah. I've had lots of, you know, interesting situations.
Oh, my gosh.
So
okay.
But it's interesting how like my former life has come into play now because like I did fundraising. And now since then, I've done like some nonprofit grant writing. And then we're a church plant. And so we're trying to get our own building. And so here again, it's like the fundraising skills is coming into play. So
that's so neat. I love that.
Okay.
Yeah. Started a Bible study with your daughter with teens or with like teens and their moms, or tell me about that.
Yes, with girls. So we moved to Oklahoma from Texas when she was entering sixth grade. And she had been in a private school in Waco, actually, is where we lived. So we were moving to Oklahoma and literally I knew no one. And since we were starting a church, we were not going to have a youth group for her either. It would just be a small church. And so I was really nervous about that and wanted to help foster some friends at all, but especially Christian friends for her. And so who ended up being my four-year-old time son's preschool teacher had a daughter, my daughter, same age. And so I was like, if you'll find some girls, I'll lead a Bible study. And I ended up leading that group of girls for 7 years until they graduated. So it was really like, it ended up just being like such a blessing for me. I mean, I felt like all the time moms were like, oh my gosh, thank you so much. But I was like, no, I'm the one that has this front row seat into their lives. I mean, it was just such a privilege to be with them.
Tell me about that. I think a lot of women who think, I love my kids to have good friends, but then they kind of stop there because then we disqualify ourselves and go, but what could I possibly do about it? What do I possibly have to offer? So did you have a background in leading Bible studies with young girls, or tell me how you thought you could? By your laughing, I'm thinking no.
That's a really good question because I thought teaching was absolutely the lowest of my gifting. Like I had never taught anything, so it terrified me. However, my husband had been a college minister at Baylor, and so I had been around teens, young adults for the past 8 years. So I was aware of issues that like college age girls struggled with. And so I already was like developing this passion for that age.
Okay.
But no, I was terrified because I really didn't know what I was going to do. And of course we were new in town. So I didn't know what, you know, the girls would think or what the other moms would think. And all the time I have moms say to me like, oh, I would love something like that for my daughter. But you know, she doesn't want me to teach it. Well, I found the opposite. I found that the girls really loved having a mom that was involved and engaged. I mean, they opened up. And I think that just the wisdom that a mom offers versus maybe, I mean, yes, they should have friendships with girls a little bit older than them. But I just felt like, no, they need adults. They need the wisdom adults have. So I loved it. And I would recommend it to everybody.
How did your kids feel about you being the one leading it?
She was really fine. You know, I think because I started it in sixth grade, it was right before they get to that age where like they don't want to be seen with their mom.
Okay.
And so I probably started it at a good time. So it was already established and it ended up that she really loved that her friends loved me. And so it kind of maybe diffused some of that, what could have been of her like shunning me or not wanting me to be around. But she was used to me being around and her friends opened up to me. And so I knew, I mean, it really helped my conversation, my dialogue with my daughter all the way through her teenage years, because I was hearing what her friends were struggling with and things that they were saying. And so there was no taboo topic. I mean, I was aware. And so I thought it was really awesome because, I mean, then she freely talked to me about things.
Yeah, that's really great. I love that idea. So you mentioned in your books that your daughter developed an eating disorder. This is the daughter that you did the Bible studies with?
Yes, it is. Yeah.
Talk to me about how you found out and then how you worked through it.
Okay. I'll back up a bit. I guess when she was a freshman in high school is when I was in the process of my first book and I was in the editing process. I guess her sophomore year, she had lost a lot of weight and a friend confronted her about it. So at that time, we took her to a dietitian and it really scared her. And so I
felt like... Let me ask you, did you talk to her about it? Did you notice that it was happening?
Yes, yes. I had brought it up months previous, and she at that point didn't really hear it from me. So I was so grateful for that friend of hers that had the guts to really say something. I mean, she had kind of withdrawn herself socially a little bit. She didn't ever want to go to meals with people. Like, she would meet up with her friends later. It was very much like she was controlling her environment when it came to food. But when we went to the dietitian, it scared her. And so it was like the freedom to eat again. Well, what I didn't realize, because she got healthy and as far as her looks, you know, she gained some weight. And so she looked healthy. Well, what I did not know is that she then went to the other side of the eating disorder and she was purging. And so that went on for, I don't know, 5 months maybe, before she ever confided in me. And she did confide in me. We were in the car one day and she was already 16. So she was a driver. So we didn't have that car time the way we used to. But yeah. One particular day, we were going somewhere together. And I mean, I hadn't even backed out of the driveway. And it was just like the floodgates opened and she told me. And so it wasn't like shocking in the sense that, like, oh my gosh, because we had already had that previous experience. Mm-hmm. However, the fact that, you know, this had been going on and she had just felt that shame and hadn't come to me and I hadn't known, you know, in that in-between time, it just broke my heart. Like, at that moment, I literally just wanted to stop the car and just grab her up and hug her and hold her. Yeah. And after that, it was, you know, it's a long journey. Eating disorders, the whole family. And along that came just depression and some other issues. But that's really what led to my book, FaceTime, because I saw that, okay, she's the daughter of a pastor. I'm her Bible study leader. Obviously, I'm biased, but she's beautiful. She was involved with tons of things at school. I mean, she had lots of friends. She made good grades. Like, if you looked at her, you would think this girl has everything. And yet she was struggling. And so I thought, okay, if this is her story, and it seems like everything's great, how many other girls have to be struggling in these same ways with feeling worthless and like they don't measure up and that they have to be perfect? And so that led me to do a survey, and then FaceTime is the book that kind of came out of it.
Okay, so let me ask you, you're sitting in the car, she's telling you all this stuff, and you're realizing, oh my gosh, like, I live with this girl and I managed to miss this. I think a lot of moms turn on themselves when they don't catch things that we feel as though we're supposed to catch. So how did you internally stay healthy through that for your daughter?
Yeah, that's such a good question, because there was that tendency to want to beat myself up and feel that shame. And I did. I mean, there was so many times that I just was like, how did this happen? You know, but I had to learn something, really the same thing that she had to learn through this process. I mean, God is so good, because it was like through her struggle and sin, he was working out good in all of us, in our family. And I saw that, you know, my identity was not in being the perfect mom. I think a lot of reasons we don't share with other people the struggles of our kids is because we fear other people are going to judge us, think that, oh, you're a bad mom, or how did that happen? Oh my gosh, you know? Mm-hmm. And I realized, you know what? There's no shame in this. Like, I want to talk about this. This is not who I am. I am loved and cherished, and I'm not a bad mom. I mean, this can happen to any of us. And I've learned a lot more grace, and I've become a lot less judgmental, because you don't know the stories and what's going on behind closed doors. And I really think that we so often we put on these masks and we pretend because we think other people are going to judge us. Thankfully, because this is her story. And so I couldn't freely talk about it without her being willing, but she really went public with it. I mean, she posts a lot on Instagram and on her own blog. And so it freed me to be able to talk about it too. And it's been amazing, because so many people have confided in both of us since then, because they see that we're safe in that sense, that, like, you know what, if this happened to them, then they're safe to talk to. They get it, that parenting's hard. Yeah. And even if we do everything right, we can still have things like this happen, you know? And so I think we, as moms, need to free ourselves from that idea that, like, we have to get it all right and that our kids are going to turn out right. That's not necessarily so.
I'm going to pause this talk with Kristen to tell you about this week's episode sponsor, RX Bar Kids. RX Bar, I'm sure you know by now, it's a whole food protein bar, 100% whole ingredients. It's a great go-to snack, but parents were saying, can we have one for our kids? And they said, yes, yes, you can. So the RX Bar Kids is designed specially for kids. It's a little bit smaller. It's flavors that kids love. There's no added sugar, no gluten, soy, dairy, or bad stuff. They're delicious, clean, and convenient. So they have chocolate chip, apple cinnamon raisin, and berry blast. They're really great for breakfast on the go, which is usually how it goes in the Thomas house. You can throw it in a lunchbox. You can even keep it in the car glove compartment. My kids have tried all three of the flavors. They love the chocolate chip best because there's chocolate in it. You can find RX Bar Kids at Target stores, or for 25% off your first order, visit rxbar.com/MSW and then enter the promo code MSW at checkout. That's rxbar.com/MSW and then the promo code is also MSW.
Okay, so talk to me about you and your friends, like, because you need to talk to somebody about it. As your kids get older, how do you talk to your friends about it to, like, bounce stuff off when they maybe don't want it to be something that everybody knows? I mean, hopefully you can talk to your husband and stuff, but, like, there's some confidentiality, but then there's also, you're a person and you're also dealing with this.
Yeah, that is tricky. And especially I would just add the extra element of I'm a pastor's wife. And so there's just this whole other element of being real careful about who I confide in. And honestly, it felt really, really lonely during that time because there were some people that I confided in, but then they didn't know what to do with it. And so I felt like, I don't know if abandon's the right word, but I felt like they didn't know what to say. And so they didn't check up on me and they didn't realize how badly it was affecting my husband and me. I mean, there were so many sleepless nights. I just was so worried about her. And because of the nature of the healing from an eating disorder, it's just, I feel like it's a lot of 2 steps forward, 10 steps back, you know? And so, I mean, we all just kind of want to, like, fix everything. We don't want to stay in that in-between stage of, like, things aren't great yet. And so I just felt like people don't really want to hang in there with you during a really long season. So it felt very lonely and there weren't really, honestly, a lot of people that I could talk to. And so that's another thing that I've learned through it, just about being a friend to others when they're going through a long process, and that it's okay to not be okay. I mean, we don't have to rush the process because God sometimes leaves us in these periods of time for our good, but we tend to just want to rush it. And so my husband and I talk a lot now about, like, why are we not okay with not being okay? Sometimes things aren't okay and that's okay.
So how do you encourage someone to be a friend? Like, just continue to check up and remind them it's okay if it's not okay?
Yeah. And even just recently, we've had something come up and a friend said, you know, I don't even know what to say. And I said, you know what, that's perfect. Yeah. Just communicating to me that you care. You don't have to have the right words to say. It meant so much just to have some people to reach out.
Yeah.
And sometimes friends, they meant well, and they wanted to just give me good advice to kind of fix it. But honestly, I felt like it diminished what I was going through. I didn't want someone to try to fix it or fix me. I wanted more of them to just listen or just to communicate, I'm here if you want to talk. And those were the friends that I tended to go to. If it was a friend that, you know, kind of wanted to give me advice, I kind of stopped talking.
Yeah. I guess. Absolutely. As your daughters grew into, they're all daughters, right?
No. I have two or sons.
Two or sons.
So
okay.
Just one daughter.
Okay. So as your kids grew into teenagers, you kind of realized, I really like teenagers. Did you expect that?
I don't know. You know, I love teenagers. I guess maybe that kind of catches me by surprise, but I love that you can have real conversations with them. And I guess because we had done ministry with college students, I already knew that I loved college students.
Okay.
But I've had more fun with my teenagers. I've loved every stage, but I honestly think it gets better and better.
I love it. What do you think is the most misunderstood thing about teenagers for moms that are concerned about that being their reality?
Yeah. And understandably, because I don't know of a harder job than raising teenagers, especially in today's culture. But, you know, when my husband, in his very first ministry job, he was an assistant pastor, and he was leading a group of parents who at the time had teenagers, and I just had a toddler and a baby. And they were going through Paul Tripp's Age of Opportunity.
Okay.
And I think that's it. Like, that stuck with me way back then when I just had a two-year-old and a baby. But it's an opportunity. And I think so often we fear the teen years, understandably, but we kind of just like pray it away. Like, we just want to get through it, you know? Mm. And so we just kind of go in the survivor mode and just pray that it would just be over as quickly as it can.
And kind of expect it to be terrible.
We do. You know? And I think then we end up doing a lot of reactive parenting instead of proactive parenting.
Okay.
And so I think just having, from the onset, I had this idea in mind that it's an age of opportunity. And so I need to be proactive in seeing it as that opportunity and taking the conversations and dealing with their hearts. And I mean, we have encountered some hard things for sure, but viewing it again as an opportunity and having that long range parenting perspective in mind that, like, it's more than just the here and now. Like, I don't want to just deal with their behavior. I want to deal with their hearts because I'm growing up a child who is ready to leave our house. And so if I keep that perspective in mind, it changes the way I, you know, dialogue with them and the way we discipline. And I think that that's something that ideally should start when they're toddlers.
Yeah. Okay. So let me ask though, if there's a listener whose kids are not toddlers anymore and they kind of feel like they've jacked it up, what would you offer for hope? Like, is it too late for them? I hope not.
No.
Okay.
No, definitely not. It's never too late. I mean, by God's grace, it is never too late. It will be more challenging because once our kids get to that age where they don't want to talk to mom and dad, if we haven't already been having those open conversations, it will be challenging. But I mean, something that my husband and I laugh about now, but when my daughter was kind of in that stage where she was locking herself up in her room and not wanting to come out and talk, the tendency would be he would want to just slam his door right back at her, you know. But I said, okay, she's the teenager, not you. You need to keep moving towards her. And so I think that we have to keep in mind that, like, even when they drive us crazy and we are so mad at them, we're not the teenager and we need to keep pursuing them. And even if they don't respond and we think that we're like making no headway at all, to keep pursuing them. And so I would just encourage parents to keep trying. And even if they think that, like, oh, my kids don't want to be around me or they don't want to talk to me, or that's not necessarily true. And I saw that not just with my own kids, but like I said, just leading that Bible study of girls. I mean, I felt like they really did want to talk. And sadly, so many of them, and I learned this in my survey that I did leading up to the book FaceTime, is that the reason they don't talk to their parents is because they don't feel like their parents are going to understand, that they're going to be judged and that they're not going to understand, which we all, you know, hear. But I think so often parents are trying to just fix them and then we're not really listening and identifying with them. And so they don't know that we're safe to talk to. And I think it kind of goes back to, like, if we learn a bad behavior, our immediate reaction is shock and we want to fix it, or we don't enter in and see how, okay, you know what, I may not act out in that way, but I understand. For instance, I'll just give you a concrete example. My 13-year-old son last year, he got caught vaping. Okay. And so we had this conversation, and the reason he did it is he didn't want the other boys to think badly of him. I mean, it was peer pressure. I mean, he wanted to look good in front of them. Okay, well, I understand that. I want to look good too. I want people to like me. So when I can enter in with him, instead of being like, I can't believe you vaped. Why would you do that?
Yeah, you've never seen me do that. You know what I mean? We like to put ourselves on a pedestal.
Right. And so when I can be like, I totally get that. I know what it feels like to want someone to like me and to do or say something to try to get them to think favorably of me. And so then it's like all of a sudden it's like they see that I'm in the same boat with them and they're much more willing to open up and share their sin because they see that I'm for them and I'm not just going to discipline them out of anger. I'm more concerned about their heart than I am their behavior. I mean, we are going to sin and mess up. It's what we do with that sin.
Yeah. Okay, so talk to me about not freaking out. Like, how does that take practice? I interviewed a girl who, and she said with her teens, she just has to practice in the mirror her bland face. How do you master your bland face?
Oh, yeah, it is practice. But I would say, too, probably because I'm a pastor's wife and we have dealt with a lot in ministry, that I've really seen that we are all far more broken than anybody cares to believe or imagine. Yeah. Yeah. And so when we really understand the reality of our true condition, I mean, it's just so often it's hidden. We don't see what's going on in someone's heart and their minds. But when we realize that we're all that, it just changes. I mean, we're all sinners. We're all broken. So we should not be shocked by sin. And that really has changed me, where I really am not so shocked by sin.
That's really good. Yeah. Yeah. It's important. So how do we lay a good foundation for the teen years if our kids aren't there yet?
Yeah. And I would say, I mean, this can start at any point. You know, like you said, there's always hope. So it's never too late. But I think really important is dealing with the heart and not just the behavior. Mm-hmm. And so for us, that looked like creating categories for understanding their hearts. I wanted them to understand the idols that were ruling their hearts, or the false gods that they were looking to functionally to give them life. And so teaching precedes understanding. And so even when they're young, they may not understand exactly, especially the idea of false gods or idolatry. Right. But we create those categories for them and we talk about it and we help them understand. And so even with like young children, you could say, what was going on? Why didn't you want to share that toy with your brother? And help them see like what was ruling their heart. Mm. And so if we're starting those things when they're young and we continue and it's just normal conversation as they're growing up, that it's so much easier when they're teenagers. They already understand what it is to be looking to their appearance or their performance for their identity. Yeah. And they have those categories for what they're turning to is false gods, what's ruling them.
You're giving them categories to understand their own heart in helping them see different idols that they may have. That's what you mean? Okay. And do you find that they're receptive to that even as they're teens? They're like, oh yeah, that is a thing, or?
Yes.
I don't know how to handle the attitude about everything. So I just assume there's going to be attitude about everything.
Yeah. And there will be some attitude for sure. I mean, I'm not saying that they're all going to be like, oh, yes, that's what's really
my
talk
heart. About an idol, Mom. I love this conversation.
But if it's just natural, like this is how we communicate with each other, like with our sin, like dealing honestly with what's going on, then it's not abnormal conversation.
Yeah.
And I found just in talking to girls that have read FaceTime, because the book really talks about this too, so many girls, like they've never seen it that way. And it's like eye-opening to them. And I'm happy that they're getting that, but it also really makes me sad that they don't have that understanding for dealing honestly with their heart. And my daughters noticed that in college too, just a difference in like, you know, people not really understanding the depth of our sin and seeing it more as just the bad behaviors instead of like,
or
really
our personality or our culture, you know, we want to
exactly
call it all these things.
I mean, you know, talking about social media, it's like, okay, why do you need to keep that ongoing Snapchat streak? Or why do you need 200 likes or whatever? Like, get deeper, like find out what it is. Well, it's really because, you know, what's ruling you, what is your functional God, is your appearance, how you look. You want to be well received, to be popular.
Yeah.
So getting down to those things to help them understand what it is going on in their heart. I mean, at our dinner conversation a lot, you know, I use things that I've seen on Instagram and, you know, I'll say, I wonder what was behind that comment. I mean, I see girls a lot of times will say something like, can I be you, or you're perfect. Well, what's really going on behind that is, I don't feel perfect. I don't feel like I measure up. And so we have to just kind of pull these things out to help our teenagers understand, because they don't know. They're saying these things, but they don't really understand that that's what's going on in their heart.
So do you find that as you have these conversations, that behavior kind of stops as they start to understand who they are?
Yes and no. I would say that they're aware of their heart. I mean, we still do the things that we don't want to do. And so you know, its sin is ongoing. And so just, I would say our Christian journey is not an uphill, like we're getting better and better. I think it's really learning to live more dependently on Christ. And so it's what we do when we see that we've fallen back into that sin. So even like for my daughter, like she's not struggling with an eating disorder anymore, but sometimes those same grueling idols that were present during that period will still come into play, but she's aware of them. And so she can identify. And so, you know, sometimes she'll take herself off of social media because she knows now, like, okay, this is consuming me right now and I need to protect myself.
Yeah.
So I would say that that is the progress I see, is not that it's like totally eliminated and it's not a struggle anymore, but they know how to deal with their hearts and to be honest about it when it crops up.
Okay. What does social media look like in your house?
We're all on it. I like it. I do feel like it kind of gives a window into our teenagers' lives that, you know, my parents didn't have with me. But it takes paying attention. I mean, I think parents need to be on the social medias that their kids are on and to be friends with as many of their kids' friends as possible. And, you know, they get on at a fairly young age now and they want lots of friends. And so I have found that I get lots of friend requests, you know, from young teenagers. And by the time they're in high school, they're maybe have forgotten that they're friends with me. I still see their profile, you know. But like I said, we have lots of conversations about it. I mean, I am paying attention and we talk about it.
Okay.
It's interesting. My Instagram did not start until my daughter was 8th, 9th grade. So some of the issues that I know parents are dealing with now, I didn't have with her. And my next son, he's 16. He really could care less about social media.
Okay.
But what I do think is really interesting is that the girls that took my survey, they didn't have Instagram until 8th or 9th grade. And then the ways they were already struggling just a few years later was significant. And those girls had only been on social media for a couple years. And so to think that now children are getting on at such a younger age, I mean, it's not surprising to me that just the rates of depression and anxiety is just skyrocketing. Yeah. Because the degree that they're going to deal with some of these mental health issues is going to be greater just because they've been exposed to it for much longer.
So do you suggest like not letting them on? Like, I just don't know how to, because I'm on Instagram all the time, but I'm also not looking at things that make me feel sad, you know? And so I think, how do I tell my daughter, you can't do that, which that isn't helpful, but neither is having a mental health issue because of it.
Yeah, right. And I think just having these kind of conversations where we're dealing with their heart and asking them how a picture, if they're on social media, you know, how that makes them feel. That was something I realized with my daughter. With her eating disorder, I had no idea that when she was looking at Instagram that she was comparing herself in the way that she was and that it was making her feel less than. Yeah. So, I mean, just asking them, you know, when you see your friends and they're all together, like, how did that make you feel that you weren't there? And I think if they can start to understand their part in it, that they might not be so resistant to you saying, you know what, I think it's a better idea if we're not on it right now. Or, you know, if we take a break from it or whatever. So, I mean, every child is so different. Like I said, my 16-year-old, he could care less. So I think that there's not like a hard and fast black and white rules that we know each of our different children. And we just have to use that wisdom to know when the right time is for that particular child. And it might mean later on, and they might be the only one without it for a time. But if it's their best, then it's for their best.
Yeah. Okay. So I have several questions from listeners. Can I ask a couple of them to you?
Of course.
Okay. One listener asked me to ask you, with teenagers where every blessed thing is a huge deal, like a pimple is the end of the world and all that, how do you teach them appropriate expression of emotions or to kind of calm the heck down? Or what should a mom do when their kids are freaking out at all times?
Yeah. And I think we have to realize that for them, it is the end of the world. Like to us, that doesn't make sense because it's so insignificant in comparison to things that we deal with. But like they really do feel that. And so I think, again, just entering in with them. And so instead of shaming them and making them feel bad that they're like, you know, making such a big deal of it. I mean, yes, remind them that it's not the end of the world. But there's a way that we can be like, I'm so sorry. I know that that is really frustrating. I mean, in her end, so they want to know that they're being heard, so that they think they're being understood. And we can understand in a different way, even if we don't necessarily go. I know my daughter doesn't want me to necessarily talk about, bring it to me. You know, they really just want to be listened to in the same way that I wanted friends to just listen to me. I didn't want them to fix it. I just wanted them to listen.
Yeah.
So I think just to be heard.
Okay, good. How about relationship, like rules and boundaries, that type of stuff with your teens? How did you navigate that? What have you seen work well?
Well, we have a saying in our house that boys are bad, bad, bad. Of course, I have two teenage boys, but I don't think girls understand really the mind of boys. No, God created boys that way, but they are attracted by sight. And so, like, I worry, I almost in some senses feel like it's harder to be a mom of teenage sons than a daughter, because I feel like, oh my gosh, these girls with their low cut dresses, short dresses, of course my son is going to be attracted and be tempted. So I think it's important that we help our girls understand that. And then for us, we really didn't do one-on-one car dates very often. I mean, it was, we prefer groups, and our daughter did have a boyfriend for a time in high school, but we very much limited their time together. I see so many kids today, and they're acting like they're married, not in the sense that they're necessarily sleeping together or not, but like just even in high school and especially college, just the amount of time and just the emotional connection. And it just makes it so much harder. I think we want to protect their hearts and their minds. And so we had a lot of boundaries, and there was a lot of frustration. I mean, she definitely was mad at us a lot about those things. But now in college, she can look back and see that that was good, and she's thankful for it.
Okay. If you're having them go out in groups, like, you don't really know if they actually are staying in the groups.
Yeah, that's true.
Okay. I think I'm just going to have a hard time with teens, because I'm like, what private investigator wants to go and spy on them? But I'm going to have to let it go.
Well, now you can, you know, if they have their smartphone, you can have it set up so that you can see where they are. Of course, you still don't know if they're with the group, you know, but that might help a little bit. And I mean, I just think it's so important that we know our kids, the friends, but also their parents. And that's been something that all the parents are not going to be on the same page. And that's really a hard thing to navigate.
So how do you navigate it?
Yeah, it's hard. We've definitely had lots of issues with different parenting styles. And again, it frustrated my daughter, but I just think it's so important to say no and to stand your ground. And even if they're mad at you for a time, it's okay. I mean, once again, she now in college, she has the maturity to look back and see that that was good and wise. But I think so often parents, they don't want their kid to be mad at them, or they don't want to be the only one not partaking in something.
Yeah.
And so they give in.
I think that's a good thing to start now too. You know what I mean? Like, we are leaving this gathering early and your friends are still here, and I don't care. We do what we are going to do. So it's kind of good to lay the groundwork that we do a little differently and make that okay.
Absolutely. And that is something that I would say, you know, that you can do before the teen years. I mean, learn to say no, because you don't want entitled teenagers. But if you have not ever told them no as they're growing up, then they're going to expect to, you know, get what they want.
Yeah.
And something, you know, we told our daughter, sometimes she'd be like, oh, I wish dad wasn't a pastor. I'm like, no, this isn't because dad's a pastor. This is because we're a believer and this is our conviction. So, and sometimes it was confusing because she'd be like, well, that family, they're Christians and they're not doing that. But we just had to go back to, well, this is what our family is going to do. And I'm sorry that they're not.
Yeah. Gosh, it's hard.
It's hard. It's hard to be swimming upstream, you know, but I think just realizing that we will, and that's okay. I mean, we have good relationships with our kids. And I feel like in one sense, we've gotten to the other side with our daughter. And now, like, seeing that affirmation, seeing like, okay, it was worth it. It was really hard to be alone in some of that, but it was worth it. And so I will definitely stick to my guns as my boys, you know, get through the high school years.
Yeah, that's so good. So I love FaceTime. I love the layout of it. It's really simple, but it's very compelling. So I'm looking forward to when my daughter's old enough to read it.
Awesome. Thank you.
Yes. Okay. So I have one more question before we're done. What is something that right now, these days, you cannot stop talking about?
Oh, well, what I'm playing nonstop right now is the Greatest Showman soundtrack. Have you seen that movie?
I haven't seen the movie, but I heard one of the songs, like the main song. It's good.
Oh my gosh, it's so good. So I downloaded it right after I saw the movie, and it's been playing nonstop.
Was the movie really good?
The movie is so good. Yeah, and I feel like it's one of those word of mouth movies. Like, I hadn't even heard of it until I went. And now, in fact, my daughter told me the other night the theater was sold out. I feel like the more people are going to see it, the more people are like, oh my gosh, you have to go see this movie again.
Yes, we were going to go see it the other day, but my son, he's 5, and it visually is so beautiful, but there's a lot going on with like lions and fire and stuff. And so he's like, I'm afraid. He was afraid of the trailer. So I'm like, okay, well, I can't.
Yeah.
So we went and saw Wonder instead, but it was really good.
I want to see that one
too.
That
was a really good movie. Yeah.
Well, when you have a chance. But one other thing that I'm kind of obsessed with right now, you know, bath bombs are huge. Yes. And every store sells them, and they're, you know, can be pricey. But my daughter and I found a recipe on Pinterest, and we've been making our own bath bombs and like using them for ourselves and giving them as gifts. And I love it.
And do they work as well as the ones you buy?
Yes. And like when we make them, my entire kitchen, like my whole house, I'm like, oh my gosh, this smells so good.
Fun.
Yeah.
And do you put like essential oils in it, or what do you do for smell?
Yep. You put essential oils in it, and it's so easy. I mean, it's just a few ingredients. It's really easy.
I love it. Send me the link so I can put it in the show notes of your bath bomb recipe.
Okay, I'll do it.
So fun. Well, Kristen, thank you so much for talking to me today.
Well, thanks for having me. I enjoyed it.
All right, so welcome back to the part where I just say some words. What about what Kristen said kind of struck a chord? Let's think about how we could struggle well this week by putting a strategy in place, just the one thing, so that we can walk away from this with somewhat of a plan. Maybe you are noticing that one of your kiddos is having a hard time developing friendships. Maybe you do what Kristen did and insert yourself into the situation called teaching them or leading a book club or something like that that gives your kids a place to hang out with other kids. You know, it's funny, after interviewing Kristen, I got really excited about the idea of doing this with my daughter. And I even drafted an email to the moms of girls her age and picked out a book and everything. But then I realized, I think that in this very season, what I need to do is be building some connections with just me and my daughter. But it was a really good thing to think through, because it led me to what I even think is a better place for her and I this very minute. But I wouldn't have gotten there if I didn't consider what Kristen did. And, you know, I think in the future that could definitely be a good thing. But for right now, it's just going to be me and her being more intentional on a weekly basis. And so I'm glad that I thought through it. Maybe this week you can work on being more empathetic towards the things that really freak your kids out, because it's a really big deal to them, even if it's not to you. They could definitely use being a little more empathetic. We went to the dentist this week, and there was so much screaming. I wished that I had like something that covered my eyes, maybe sunglasses. This was so hard for me to not roll my eyes and say, get it stinking together, people. But I didn't do that, but it was hard. Maybe you like the idea of reactive versus proactive parenting, and you can think about some ways to ahead of time have a plan for when things are gonna get a little crazy so that they don't get crazy. Maybe like Kristen, you need to get a little bit more up on what's going on with social media. I think it can be something that we are really afraid of. And so some of us, when we're afraid, just refuse to look at it because it can't possibly be happening if I don't know about it. I remember when we lived in China, I mean, we think we have big streets here. They would have like 10 lanes of traffic there. And the people crossing the street on foot, the pedestrians, they would just look down at their phones and walk across 10 lanes of traffic. And the prevailing thought was, if I'm not looking at you, then I can't possibly know that you're there. And so you need to stop for me. And so it was amazing to see these people risking their own lives, stepping out into traffic and not looking at it. That doesn't mean the car is not there. The car is still there, and the car is still way bigger than you. So I think that with technology, we need to face it head on. We need to acknowledge that it's there and be as educated as possible. So maybe that's something you can do to struggle well this week. Maybe you get Kristen's new book and go through it with your child. It covers a lot of really good topics, really great look at the heart behind the things that are going on online. I'll put a link to that in the show notes at momstrugglingwell.com/podcast. I would love it if you would find me on Instagram or Facebook at momstrugglingwell. I would also love it if you could review the show on iTunes. It helps people find it
It helps me know people are listening. And go ahead and make sure you're subscribed to the podcast so that you don't miss anything. I would hate for you to miss something. All right, let me pray for us, and then we'll get started on this week. Lord, I think in our culture, teenagers have become this big, scary thing that we just hope we can survive the stage of. But if I understand correctly, teenagers are part of your plan. They are not an accident. They are not aliens. They are not bad guys. They are just stinky, emotional, pimply people. I pray that if we have teenagers, or if we are about to have teenagers, that you would help it not instill a fear in us that is not helpful. We know that fear is not from you, but it's hard to remember that in the middle of interactions with people who are not very nice to us, who we have kept alive for their whole life. Lord, thank you that you have created this to where we have to come back to you and have to keep depending. Help us to do it quicker. Help us to do it with less foot stomping and attitude ourselves. You've given us everything that we need, and I pray that you would encourage and strengthen and strongly support the moms of teenagers who are listening to this, and grow the character of us moms who are about to really need these words in the next couple years. We love you, Lord, in Jesus' name. Amen.